Welcome everyone to the first round of the NCAA tournament and the Midwest region from Omaha, Nebraska. Number 11 K-State, number 6 USC. The winner will take on the winner of the Badgers in Cal State Fullerton later tonight. This is Kevin Harlan with Dan Bonner. And let's take a look at our lineups tonight and everybody talking about the two great freshmen, Beasley of the Wildcats against Mayo of the Trojans.
Kevin, and people have been talking about these young men since they were in high school. It's going to be a real pleasure to watch them perform on the same court tonight.
For Kansas State, they're led by the first-year coach, Frank Martin, who took over for Bob Huggins. And Tim Floyd is the coach of the Trojans, now in his third year at USC.
All right, welcome in. KSO Classic, Mason Voth, Drew Galloway here with you. This is our fourth one, and we're finally getting to talk basketball. College basketball is my number one. I love everything about it. I always, you get to like mid-October, and football season's great. It's a lot of fun, but I start to get that itch, and I just, I hate fake basketball games. I hate fake games that don't count of every kind, but I do get excited when that first exhibition game comes and I'm always ready for college basketball. So it's always been important for me. And we talk so much with these games that come up about, obviously we're, on the younger side for a lot of the games that we're talking about. And so what was the impact actually for us? Like 2009 KU football is being, middle schoolers, or I guess I was in the sixth grade when that game took place. And there's, I think it's significant when you're in school, you handle it a lot different because the razzing that you get as a 10-year-old from people about your team sucking, it cuts a lot deeper than it does when you're 27 years old, because you're just like, all right, yeah, whatever. You're an idiot. I also think that your school sucks.
But a lot easier to take it personally.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. When you're 10 years old, it's personal. I've got a lot of personal thoughts from this basketball season. But it was significant. I couldn't control how excited I was all day at school, waiting for this game to take to start. And then you had to wait till the evening. I just getting to see K-State involved in the pageantry of the NCAA tournament. And even something as simple as seeing, K-State play on CBS, like that was an awesome moment for me growing up as I sat there in my black Michael Beasley cat scratch jersey that I got for Christmas that was too big for me because I think it was like an adult small or something. But it didn't matter. I wore it to school that day, and I wore it to school the day of the KU game that season that ended the streak. And you want to talk about getting personal. Shout out to Noah Webster. I can still remember telling, making fun of me for wearing a dress and blah, blah, blah. And then I got to show up to school the next day. And I was the cock of the walk, basically, because K-State had beat KU. And that night, that KU game, I had a friend in my neighborhood. His family had a nice setup in their basement for, watching movies or games or whatever. And he had invited me over there to watch the game that night. And, KU people, they're just like, yeah, it's not going to, whatever. Yeah, come on over. So I went. And then as the game started to wind down, it was like minutes left. And he's telling me I needed to go home. It was time for me to go home because, they handle things so graciously over there on the KU side. You'd also like to know that guy never went to KU. None of his family members went to KU. That's just how that goes. But anyways, we're talking about a game that not quite to that level, but still so significant and a lot of fun. 2008 K-State USC basketball, the first round of the NCAA tournament. The Wildcats get into the NCAA tournament this season after being left out on the bubble the year before. And we talked to Wyatt Thompson about this at Media Day, and I made the comment that I remember the year before Texas Tech had gotten in, and I thought, oh, well, if Texas Tech's in, then K-State should have been in. So it was nice after coming close the year prior to getting in here. And this is, a lot of people, I think, are aware of the status of the Big 12 now and probably back then. But for some, it's good to remember, like, the Big 12 was not overwhelmingly strong. And that's why, K-State's an 11 seed in the NCAA tournament, or you know, a team that you look at and you say, well, maybe 07 had a better tournament resume, why they didn't get in. But it never hurts to have the big storylines in college basketball on your team. K-State had it work for them. The Oklahoma team with Trae Young, you know, bubble, so they've gotten in. Texas that same year with Mo Bamba. It helps to have the guys that people care about in college basketball. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, Drew, what do you remember from this game as a 10-year-old? Well, I guess you wouldn't have been 10 yet. You would have.
No, I was only 9.
And actually, I guess I was days away from turning 10 when this took place. I was still 9 as well. So, yeah, what do you remember from this pivotal moment in your life?
You remember being at school that day and like the anticipation. I was at this game.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well, you know, I'm sorry that I didn't have as cool of parents as you, Drew.
So I was in Omaha with my parents and one of my cousins. So for us, it was like the anticipation of like waiting until K-State session to really tip off, and just like that feeling of like, holy crap, like this is the first time that I'm going to see K-State in the NCAA tournament. Like all of these games have been like hazy for me of like, oh, what do I remember? This is the first true game that we've done in these four that I really remember. Like I remember going through the Coliseum in Omaha. And of course, the program was like $15, but I was like, oh, we got to get it. It's the first time that I've seen K-State in a tournament.
Well, hey, and you're 9 years old. It's not even money doesn't even mean anything to you at that point.
Exactly. So I remember like various points of this basketball season too. Like I was there when K-State beat KU to break the streak, and then of course my sister, one of my sisters, was in school at K-State. So of course I'm 9 years old and we're out in Aggieville that night. I don't think that we get home until like 2 a.m.
So a school night. Come on.
Yeah. And it was a school night. I don't think that I went to school the next day. I can't lie. But there was so much fun about this season. And like just the nostalgia of this game, I think, was so apparent for me. Like, I don't know if it was for you, but I was like, holy crap. Like, going through this, we're going to have some highlights during this game. And I wrote down some hot takes about some of the players in this game because there are a few that I think are pretty unparalleled in K-State history. And it's not just like, oh, like Jacob Bullen, obviously, and Michael Beasley. Like, it's there are other guys, and I'm like, holy crap. They were so much better than I really remember.
Well, and this is going to be a part of like that era too, where I, when we were down in Texas this week, I made the comment to John Kurtz about how Mike Sweeney was my favorite Royal of all time. He was like, well, wasn't Sweeney like out of there by the time you would have? I said, well, he, you know, his last couple of years, that was like when I was really getting into it. And so like, this is the tail end here where, once 2010 hit, you know, I'm a seventh grader in the 2010 like school year. So I'm like way into it and engaged, like tail end of sixth grade and all that. So like I get it. I'm crafting my own terrible opinions, but they're at least a little bit more educated than, you know, when you're younger and you're just like, oh, K-State winning is good. K-State losing sucks. But this is like this team has a lot of guys that were also around. You know, obviously Beasley and Walker and Poland play a large role in it, but like Clint Stewart was connected to, you know, Lance Harris being on the team, and my favorite K-State player, basketball or football of all times, Cartier Martin. So like Clint played with Cartier Martin. Like there is the crossover there. I'm Darren Kent, the White Tiger, is kind of like an icon, I would say, in K-State basketball. Just so much of that where these guys are important to, and everybody has an era that they can point to and say, whether the team was good or bad, that like those are the guys that made me fall in love with K-State and sports. And this basketball team, it plays a large part of that for me, you, and anybody else right around our age.
I totally forgot about this when you're talking about like what I remember from this game, like this season. You got the Michael Beasley cat scratch jersey. I got Michael Beasley and Bill Walker posters for Christmas when I was a kid. And what play would you say was the Bill Walker one?
I know, because I had it as well. It was Bill missing a posterized dunk in an exhibition game against Fort Hays State.
And I'm not even kidding you when I say that I had those posters up in my childhood bedroom, I think until like I was a junior or senior in high school. Like, those two meant so much to me, and like how K-State basketball ended up being a part of my life. Like, kind of like Mason, I'm a huge, huge college basketball fan. And just those two guys revitalizing K-State history for basketball just makes it a huge deal. I was just saying that I had those posters up until I was a junior in high school.
Oh, I had my whole room at my parents' old house, the one that I grew up in for 15 of my first 18 years of life. It was loaded with K-State posters all over the place. And, you know, you remember like with football, they used to like each like little, it wasn't the program, but like they had, it was essentially like a flip card they'd hand out to fans or whatever. Oh, yeah. Each one was done like a poster. The specific player had that. I put all my tickets on the wall and all that when that was a real thing. This right here, Drew, I don't have the Bill Walker poster anymore. And by the way, I'm not meaning to offend you, Henry, but we are going to refer to you as Bill Walker in this. Because, you know, you're Bill Walker to K-State fans. We mean it from a respectful spot. I'm not going to call you Billy, but you are Bill Walker to us. I respect your name change now, but you are Bill Walker for the purposes of this. But you can look on here. This is the basketball. My first time going to K-State basketball camp was the summer of 2007. And so, as you can see, let's over here, that would be the signature of Michael Beasley, who was at camp that year. And just, you know, all of the guys that are on there that were hanging around. There's Clint Stewart down at the bottom.
Gotta appreciate the guys that have their number that go with the signature. Makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. And well, and then, you know, you look at some of this stuff and you go, really, I don't know. I really still don't know who you were or what was going on. But yeah, that's just great memories to look back on. And I mean, there's Bill Walker right there. And this is this would have been the year. So towards the end of Frank Martin basketball camp that year, we're sitting there, and I still, like, one of my favorite things, the meal that they gave us that last day, they had box lunches from Planet Sub there for us. I don't think I ever ate Planet Sub again after that, but I always thought about it and remember it. I was like, I love Planet Sub. So I grab my box. I'm, 9 years old, and I'm sitting over there just on, like, they have the benches set up along the court in Bramlage. And Frank Martin comes and sits down next to me just to eat his lunch too, just sitting there, whatever, and says a couple things to me. And then this guy comes over that is speaking Spanish. I have no idea what they're saying. And that guy ended up being Denny Clemente, who obviously had to sit out this season because of the transfer rules. And then, you know, he had a pretty good 2008-09. And then 2009-10, he was fantastic and helped K-State get to the Elite Eight. Like, that's just, and I think that's probably another reason why I have such an attachment to K-State basketball and remember this era so fondly, is because the number one thing I look forward to every summer was getting to go to Frank Martin basketball camp and be in that environment and just like shooting the Nike ball with the Power Cat on it on the floor at Bramlage. Like, that, I mean, that's still the best thing that I've probably ever done in my life. Like, peak happiness level, I don't think I can get to that in any other way in my life. I do have children. That's probably, as an adult, that's probably where we go.
And you're also married.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, that's the overrated part of things. Like, I'm glad I did it, but wedding day, boy. I said from the get-go then, I'm not doing this for everything that happens today. I'm doing this for everything that happens after today. Anyways, we've talked enough about some of the nostalgia and other things, and we'll get into that as the show kind of progresses. But I want to start by doing what we normally do. We talk about the starting lineups. You saw them in the intro right there, Kevin Harlan breaking it down for everybody, but I will throw them back up on the screen one final time for us to take a look and a peek at what's going on. Clint Stewart, Blake Young, Bill Walker, Dominique Sutton, Michael Beasley, the starters for the Cats. Hackett, who are you? Don't know. Probably a hack. Lewis, don't know you. OJ Mayo, do know you. Jefferson, get lost. And then Taj Gibson, who kind of, you know, in this game is the forgotten man when you're talking Michael Beasley, OJ Mayo, and Bill Walker. But
yeah,
Taj Gibson, probably, he had the best NBA career out of all of them.
I was about to say he was probably like the fourth, like most popular player going into this game at best, and ends up having the best NBA career. It's crazy to think about.
Yeah, it's strange how that stuff ends up working out. Although I will say this, on the Michael Beasley front, people will make their comments about, oh, you know, bust, all that. Yeah, he didn't perform up to the level that potential number one pick, ultimately number two behind Derrick Rose was. He still made a lot of money in the NBA, still logged 11 seasons, averaged double figures, like, and had some really good seasons And he got screwed by the timing of everything in Miami. The fact that they were, you know, I don't know. I think that screws you up. And then you go to Minnesota, like nobody's going to be successful. Minnesota and Phoenix, the teams, he only played two seasons in Miami. Then they had to make room for a guy named LeBron James and Chris Bosh.
Those two were terrible.
Like, they just, you wrecked him from the get-go. But Michael Beasley was a more productive player than Taj Gibson even. But the longevity of Taj Gibson's career, Michael Beasley only played in 609 games. He's playing the big three. Drew, do you realize that Taj Gibson played 37 games in the NBA this past season?
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Taj has always had like crazy longevity. I could not tell you where he's at right now, but that doesn't surprise me. He's probably playing for like a terrible team.
Yep, you're very hot. You're on that trail. He played for the Charlotte Hornets this past year.
Yeah, that tracks.
Do you want to know what Taj Gibson's nicknames on Basketball Reference are?
Yes, because there's some wild ones if you look on that site.
Hard Hat and Lunch Pail.
Nobody has ever called him that.
Michael Beasley's Be Easy, Walking Bucket, Super Cool Bees is what it says.
It's hard for me to call you a bust if you still play double-digit seasons in a professional league. Like, that's what's tough.
Yeah, and, you know, he averaged double figures in seven of those 11 seasons that he played in, including, you know, his first year with Minnesota, he averaged 19 points a game.
I would say that his NBA career was disappointing because obviously, like, when you go that high, you want him to be like a future superstar, but he was a pretty damn good role player in the NBA for a long time.
Yeah, and you know, Knicks fans want him to be MVP. All right, let's get into what we normally do here. First, we got to rate the uniform matchup in this game. The Cats and their iconic racing stripes, the black versions. I love these uniforms as much as I like, you know, the cat scratches for the nostalgia and like just being unique with the cat scratch. These are the best look that K-State had. Really. In a long time, like you probably would have to go back to the 80s to find a jersey better than these ones that K-State wore in this game against USC, which oddly enough, K-State during this time in multiple seasons, they switched their total jersey look in the middle of the year, which is one of the stranger things that could happen. It's a shame that nobody had that idea when they were wearing that ugly crap that Bruce's final teams had on.
Yeah, Scott. That is true. Also, like the switch by Bob Huggins and Frank Martin to just go with the K-State across the chest was an excellent decision.
Yeah, good. It's a, you know, good branding play by the university, despite what some might say on the KSO message boards. I gave the uniform matchup here a 7.7.
Oh, wow. You went very low. I went 8.8. But I think that's all like nostalgia based. Like, give me the cat scratches, and I'll give it like close to a 9 or 10 every time.
USC drug this thing down. I don't like what USC has going on here.
Yeah, so. USC doesn't have a great uniform in this game, but the black cat scratch is so good that it vaulted it up
fair,
for me.
Fair. All right, let's dive deeper into this thing, and we'll start by asking Drew, what was the best play in this game for K-State?
My best play of this game is a Jacob Pullen pass, actually, to Ron Anderson. I think it was midway through the first half. It was just a play that a vintage Jacob Pullen drive and pass. And we'll get into Ron Anderson a little bit later, but Anderson got buckets in this game.
Yes, he did. Here is the pass that Drew's talking about. This was one that you texted me yesterday. That you were like, this is what I need. And I said, believe it or not, I actually had that one, and I made a note about it because it is – Jacob Pullen made this pass so many times in his career at K-State and was so good at it. You can see it now. He gets there underneath the basket and is able to just kind of jump, flip it back to somebody who has an easy bucket. So here's Jacob Pullen to Ron Anderson.
Here's Pullen working on Johnson. And feeds inside to Anderson. What a quick pass. That pass and that deuce has just given Kansas State their biggest lead tonight of 10.
So that made it 27-17. And he got Taj Gibson and another USC guy to do what my brothers and I would refer to as joy jumping. If we were playing 2K, both left their feet sold out for whatever they thought Jacob Pullen was doing. I think they thought that he was going to put it up and try to score it. And instead, he dumps it off to Ron Anderson, who scores, and he had a big night for K-State in that. And to give kind of an idea of this game, Drew, not only do I have individual plays from this, here is the SportsCenter recap from the K-State-USC game of this night. It's about a minute and a half. It'll give you some highlights. It'll give you an idea of the stories of which Ron Anderson was a big part of, because it was the youngsters for K-State that came through in this win over USC.
Precious first-round matchup in the Midwest. 11-seed Kansas State, Michael Beasley, taking on O.J. Mayo and the 6-seed USC. Beasley at only 5-3 in the first half because of foul trouble. Here, the strong bucket and the foul. That was on Taj Gibson. And Gibson's foul trouble proved to be pivotal. Mayo at 20 points. USC, that was their first lead since they had a 2-0 lead. Bill Walker had 22 points. Beasley, though, finished with 23-11. Kansas State, their first tournament win in 20 years.
It's nice to have one win, but it's better to have two or three, you know. We're happy about this win. We're excited that we bought the first wins, you know, in 20 years, but it don't stop here, you know. This game is erased. This game is history. We're going for the next one.
That's what it's all about this time of year. You know, you got to figure out a way to survive, score one more point than the other team, and you know, that gives you life, and that allows you to practice the next day and play one more. That's all you want to do here.
I always say survive in advance. That's kind of my thing in the tournament.
Is it?
Yeah.
Who stole that from Dickie V?
Yeah. Who stole that from
Jimmy V?
Right. Just keep stealing it down the line. Well, everybody knew about Michael Beasley going into the game. He's not the only freshman doing big things for K-State. The only four Wildcats were in double figures, all freshmen. They accounted for 66 of the team's 80 points. Don't forget about Bill Walker at 22 and 17 of the 22 when Beasley was in foul trouble in that first half.
That also doesn't account for the fact that fellow freshman Dominique Sutton was in this game. Great fact about Dom Sutton in this game: only attempted 7 threes over the course of the season. The only one he made took place in this game for K-State. This, Drew, is my favorite and what I think is the best play of the game because it set the tone early, and it would be one of those moments that as a fan reassures you when you get into it. Oh yeah, K-State is back in the tournament, and they're not going to just, you know, show up, be a disappointment. They're not gonna Nebraska this, you know, get in the NCAA tournament and lose like always. The Cats came to play, and I thought this play epitomized that the best.
K-State in the man-to-man. Dwight Lewis with the drive. I'm Stewart. Beasley there to order the shot and grabs the loose ball.
You better take it with some authority if you're going to take it at Beasley.
Stewart at three, Mayo late with the defense on the closeout, which they need.
So you get the Beasley deflection on the USC shot. K-State takes it down the floor and in transition. Clint Stewart, no thought about it, just pulls up, knocks it down. I thought that was one of those that was great at setting the tone. I would also point out that Clint Stewart had another three in this game that would be eligible for this. And it came as USC, who K-State had built this bigger lead at halftime. You're probably feeling a little good. Okay. USC cut it down to one. And so K-State needed an answer after USC had even taken the lead at one point in the second half. Clint Stewart had it, though.
He collects his eighth rebound.
Boy, if he gets his hands on the ball, nobody's taking it from him.
Young pulling Beasley a screen. Outside, it's a Stewart three. Right down the middle.
So from that point forward, the game never got closer than that. Clint Stewart pushes the lead from 1-4. K-State needed that bucket. They were reeling a little bit, and they're able to not really look back from that point because USC only scored 13 more points the entire game from that point moving forward. There are some others that we'll talk about in this game that aren't necessarily like what I think are like the most important ones, or but maybe some of the more fun ones in the game. A lot of the ones that I pulled out, they come, and you can find this in any basketball game, but they come in pivotal moments where, hey, you needed a bucket, or, boy, that's a backbreaker for USC to let happen, just like this Ron Anderson bucket.
Mayo is 4 of 9, now 4 of 10. Anderson comes up with another rebound. He's collected 7 with 6 points. Young, an open triple. Anderson inside, uncovered and untouched, and the Wildcats jump off to an 8-point lead.
First of all, love the confidence of Blake Young saying, yeah, I'll take this shot. But Ron Anderson, who was right place, right time a lot in this game, once again, has a big bucket there. And, you know, looking at Ron Anderson and what he did in this contest, 10 points for Ron Anderson, who only had one more season at K-State after this. But I went and I was like, okay, well, I need to see what all he did over the course of this season. Only 3 times in 2007-2008 did Ron Anderson score in double figures. He only did it one time against Power 5 competition, and that was against USC. His other games, he did it 14 against Wagner, and big enough, he had 11 in a 2-point overtime win against UCF down in the Milk House at the Old Spice Classic early in the season. But his only time in double figures against a power conference opponent this season came in the NCAA tournament first round against USC.
You know, you brought the other Ron Anderson games up. I 100% anticipated that being the trivia question for today.
Oh, I've got a trivia question for you. We'll get to it in a little bit. But let's get through some of the other notables plays from this game that I thought were important. And this one, we already talked about him a little bit because he's part of folklore in K-State basketball. Because he's like an endangered species, the white tiger, he kind of put a guy on a poster at one point, and nothing would probably demoralize a USC player more than Darren Kent taking him to the rack.
Cohen, well, you got to find Beasley here, who's doubled, and then Beasley finds Kent, who races down the lane for the dunk.
That is a great job by Kent, because he didn't throw the ball to Beasley and stand there and watch. He threw the ball to Beasley, the double team went, and he cut right to the basket.
I would like to know, you know, maybe this wasn't like a peak, like, customization era, but definitely if I was in college at the time, I would have gotten a Darren Kent jersey. I would have found a way to make that happen.
You kind of undersold there. You said he dunks on some guy for USC. He dunks on OJ Mayo there.
True. Yeah.
Of all the plays in this game, that I think is the most iconic play. I mean, I even see every once in a while D. Scott will rattle off a tweet that has the Darren Kent dunk in it. So I would say that that's probably like the most, like the play that's most associated with this game. I almost put that as my best play because it's just so iconic, considering like the rest of this game.
Yeah. And you bring up OJ Mayo. We have to talk about him before we go much further, because the backstory to all of this, it weaves and kind of runs deep. So in the last KSO Classic, we listened to Bob Huggins the day of the season opener for the 2006-2007 season. And Todd Harris, the sideline reporter, made a comment about the recruiting class, and Huggins talking about, yeah, well, you know, they've done a great job, or we've got really connected assistants, wink, wink. Shout out Delonte Hill. Part of that was, yes, Michael Beasley, Bill Walker were going to be Wildcats. But at one time, it was thought that O.J. Mayo was going to be a Wildcat. And he had been a high school teammate of Bill Walker before. I believe a team that our very own Derek Young played against in high school. He shares a story sometimes about his interaction with Bill Walker on the basketball court. So this had like some storylines already kind of built into this for K-State. But the fact that, you know, you already had Walker and Beasley, but you thought that you were going to get O.J. Mayo as well is pretty significant.
Yeah, that is kind of like a lost part of the history of, like, I wish that I was on the message boards back then of like, the, oh, we already have this class. Like, it can get better by getting O.J. Mayo. But there's part of me that, like, you really dive in and look at, like, K-State's resume and everything. Kind of feels like they were a little bit underseeded, so they could play O.J. Mayo and USC a little bit.
Like, yeah, no, they definitely. And to give K-State the ability to go to Omaha to play. I think that's a big part of this game.
And the ability for Wisconsin to become, like, the bugaboo of all bugaboos.
Yeah. So the backstory on O.J. Mayo is that he was at one time thought to be going to K-State, then Bob Huggins takes the West Virginia job, and so O.J. Mayo ends up at USC. Here are some of the other more notable plays from this game. We'll get to Michael Beasley, but he didn't come on until late. Early on, it was up to Bill Walker, and he had done a lot of his scoring in the first half, but he did deliver a big basket in the second half as well.
Man-to-man defense. Beasley might set a screen. Pullen goes outside. Walker for three. Good! Bill Walker with his first points in the second half.
Oh, and Lewis not looking for the ball.
And Lewis launching and missing. Beasley's got the double-double with his 10th rebound.
Boy, that pass surprised Lewis, and he never got under control before he shot it.
Cohen to Anderson. Anderson puts it in. He's got 10. He averages 3. Approaching 4 to play. And Kansas State's got their biggest lead tonight.
Yeah, so not only does Bill Walker nail the big 3, then bad shot attempt by USC. K-State runs down the floor, and once again, Ron Anderson, right place, right time. He's there. He takes care of business. One other area that I want to point out that came from beyond the three-point line, as many of you know, it is the best shot in basketball. It's the way the game is meant to be played. Michael Beasley had struggled in the early parts of this game, but he found it late. He ended up leading the team in scoring still, despite the fact that he got off to the rough start and was in foul trouble. Late in the game, he hit kind of the icer, and the only other time that I can remember that stands out to me as vividly as this one, Keontae Johnson did something kind of similar to Kentucky, where it's, I would, you know, pardon my French, I'd call it the FU three, where the best player on your team just says, yep, I'm firing from right here, and they do it themselves, they get him in position, and they knock it down. So here is Michael Beasley doing just that.
Well, it's been a while since USC got a stop on the defensive end, and that's what they need now.
Walker is picked up. Jefferson is screened by Beasley. Now they switch on defense. And Jefferson goes on Beasley, launching a three. Cold! A cold-blooded three by Michael Beasley.
And so you hear Dan Bonner say just before that about how USC needs a stop, and the best way to make sure that you prevent your opponent from getting that stop is just let your best player put the ball in the hole, and Michael Beasley was able to do just that with that three that gave K-State a 12-point lead.
I believe that the term that is used for that three is hand down, man down.
Yeah, and
that guy never got a hand up.
And you also, in that moment, you got to hear Kevin Harlan, cold-blooded, and he was in peak form in this game. We normally get to it later, but that's a part of this story. How would you grade out the broadcasters? Because I like a lot of the CBS analyst crew. I thought Dan Bonner was fine in this game. This is peak Kevin Harlan, though, before he's bought into all the hype and he's decided that, I need to try to be Kevin Harlan. No, he just was Kevin Harlan back then. This broadcast crew gets an A grade from me.
Well, I guess I forgot that we do like a grade instead of a scale for broadcasters. They'd be like a 97% for me. They were so good in this game. I have it written down, like just the notable moments from the broadcast, that this just felt like a classic NCAA tournament game. The graphics, playing on CBS, it's Kevin Harlan. It's Dan Bonner, who's been doing games forever. It just felt like an NCAA tournament game.
Yeah, it was everything about it. It was big time. It felt like it, and it was supposed to be. Bill Walker, we talked about him. He is my MVP of the game. Yes, he didn't score as much, and ultimately the shooting numbers ended up being similar to Beasley, but he was the guy that got things moving when not a whole lot else was happening for K-State in the first half, and he kind of carried the flame until it was able to be picked up later on, and you know he'd done a nice job at building some cushion for K-State. So Bill Walker, he's the one that his play in this game is what stood out to me. He gets to be the MVP.
No, I'm right there with you. I don't think that it's even really that close on who the MVP is. I think that it was clearly Bill Walker. Beasley had two fouls in the first 5 minutes, had three fouls in the first half, and Walker just went on a tear. This is where we get to the takes time that I have. There will never be a basketball player at K-State more athletic than Bill Walker, and that's with him blowing out a knee.
Like, yeah,
he was so athletic and so smooth. And like, I have it written down too, that he's the smoothest athlete of a basketball player I have seen in a K-State uniform ever.
Well, and you know, they talked about it on the broadcast too, at one point mentioning about the knee injury thing and what they had said about, you know, wait till you see this guy. And that was with the, like you mentioned, just the injury history there. This is where, you know, we talk what ifs at times in this. You start to think to yourself, like, Bill Walker was a very bottom round pick in the NBA draft after this season. And ended up, you know, I think this is what people have to remember, too, is when we're talking about these careers of guys, yeah, they're not all going to be all-stars or whatever. But Bill Walker logs minutes in and five seasons in the NBA, played in 181 career games. Like, he also had a decent NBA career relative to how everything else goes for a lot of players. But I don't know that he necessarily needed to leave early to capitalize on that. And this is the one where you look and say, boy, if you have him for one more year, at least you're an NCAA tournament team instead of an NIT team in 2009. And then certainly, like, and that'd probably be getting a little greedy, because at some point the talent needs to go. Like Taj Gibson for USC, he went after his sophomore year this season that we're talking about right here. But like, that's just always a thought that stood out to me. Obviously on the Beasley end, you go, well, Beasley could have been there with, you know, but he wasn't. Like, Beasley was always a one-year player. And yes, the expectation from the recruiting standpoint was that Bill Walker also would be that. But the circumstance dictated that maybe, like, in that moment, and this is not like us talking running backs in football, you come back, because you watch Bill Walker in this game, it's clear he could have been the 40-point guy any given night. He could have been the number one. And it's like, if he and Michael Beasley were on separate teams in college, you would have probably looked at him as a 1A, 1B situation in all of this. Like, he could be that good. And so you just wonder, like, you come back at least one more year, K-State is obviously better for it, and maybe you're able to kind of elevate yourself and your draft status, and you don't get buried to where you're a late-round pick, you get traded on draft night to the Celtics, and you're kind of buried there. And, like, also, bad time to be going to the Celtics. Like, if we talk about Beasley and Walker, they ended up in the worst possible landing spots for this era in the NBA, because the Heat were gearing up to make the big push for LeBron. So Beasley only gets 2 years with the team that drafted him. They gave him up because they needed room for Bosh and Wade and LeBron. And then you look at this, like, this is in the thick of the big three era in Boston, where you've got Garnett, Allen, and Paul Pierce there. And so, like, young guy goes to that team, there's not going to be many minutes to go around. Like, I think it's significant to go back and look and see that Bill played 29 games in the 2009 season with the Celtics. Like, that's significant to me on how that ends up working out, because that was coming off of their finals win the season before, and then they got back to the playoffs the next year before they were ultimately eliminated. I think they went to the Eastern Conference semis, and they were knocked out by the Magic that year. But, like, that's where Walker's the one that retroactively I look back and you go, man, one more year at least, maybe that makes a difference. Because you saw it in this game. He could have been the number one and a great one at that if Beasley wasn't there.
I know that Beasley has talked and did it on 3Ma last year when they had, or this past season when they had him on the show, that if NIL was around, he probably stays at K-State. If NIL was around back then, I would almost guarantee that Bill Walker probably stays.
Absolutely.
So it is something to just, like, think about. Like, there in this era is a way more likely scenario that Bill Walker comes back, and K-State would have been so much better for it. Because, I mean, as we know, because they just made the NIT the next year, they weren't really ready to take that next step.
Yeah, if you had one more piece there that could have kind of been ready and to assist with you, it would have helped, because the talent would have been on the high end. And Bill Walker instantly becomes your best player in 2009, no question about it. All right, we'll get back into some of the other things to discuss this game in a moment, but it's time for the Cats to Ireland trivia question. Here it is, Drew. Who was Notre Dame's leading scorer in their 68-59 win over K-State in the Jimmy V Classic this season? I remember that was a big deal. K-State playing in the Jimmy V Classic. They wore the black cat scratches for that game. I thought that this was the right question to ask. You know, the Fighting Irish, we're talking cats2ireland.com. And you're making faces like, boy, this seems insane to think about. This is one of those college basketball icons of this era to me that I think about a lot, and my brothers and I loved talking about. Didn't so much like what he did in the game against K-State. But I'll give you time to ponder this and remind people to go to cats2ireland.com, get your last chance to get travel, hospitality, and game tickets for the K-State-Iowa State matchup over on the Emerald Isle. Dublin, Ireland. It's coming up August 23rd, 2025. We are getting close to being a month out from kickoff of Cats and Clones over in Ireland. So, Drew, who was Notre Dame's leading scorer in their 68-59 win over K-State in the Jimmy V Classic?
I feel like I'm going to kick myself for not getting this, because, like, I can picture it in my mind, but I cannot think of what this guy's name is.
Can you describe him? I'll give you half credit.
Yeah, like, I can't get, like, a great description either. Like, I have, like, vague, like, memories of, like, highlights of this game, but nothing, like, totally that I'm like, oh, I definitely know who this is.
Would it help you if I asked you what skin color you thought this guy was?
Probably not.
Okay, all right. Well, he was a big oaf of a white guy. It was Luke Heron Goaty is the correct answer. 19 points.
Okay, now that you say Luke Heron Goaty like that, that is who I've been imagining this whole time.
Yeah, I figured you would, you know, remember Luke Heron Goaty. The book on Heron Goaty, he was a 2-time All-American, and in his sophomore, junior, and senior seasons, averaged over 20 points per game in all of those. Also logged around 6.5 rebounds every game in his career, including his junior season where he averaged 8.3, or actually, excuse me, he had 9.5 total rebounds in his career, and he averaged a double-double in his sophomore and junior years. This was his sophomore season where he played K-State. But Luke Heron Goaty is the answer there to the Cats to Ireland trivia question for the week. So there you go, and we can get back into talking about K-State USC from this game and some of the other things that come with it. I want to ask we kind of skipped over it. It's tougher in basketball because you can see some ugly plays from time to time. Was there anything that stood out as the worst play in this game to you?
There was a first half where I think K-State took a rush shot And then USC got the rebound and had an alley-oop on Dominique Sutton. That was probably the worst one. But like you said, like basketball, it just goes so quick that like you can see some bad shots. Like it's not even like a K-State worst play, but I actually had that play where we've already highlighted where Walker hits the three.
Yeah.
And then the USC guy drops the ball, but shoots it anyway and then misses. And then Ron Anderson gets the putback out after the Blake Young miss. Like I had that written down also as like a potential worst play.
Yeah. Not great there. I know what you're talking about in the first half because I thought about it, and this is where we can morph into what aged poorly. And because there were some bad rush shots in this game, one of the things that I thought you look back on at this era and you go, holy cow, like, why was that ever a thing? The 35-second shot clock, the drop down by 5 seconds, it feels significant enough. And not only the 35-second shot clock, the fact that it did a full reset on offensive rebounds. Whereas now, if the offensive rebound happens in the half court, it goes down only back to 20, which is very good for the flow of the game, because you did see moments in this where like rush shots feel even bigger because you're like, dude, you've got 35 seconds to figure something out here. You don't need to take a shot like this. And then also on the other side of it, you can have possessions that just feel like they take forever because you wear it down, you miss a shot, you get the rebound, oh, fresh 35. That was one of the things that I thought didn't age very well from this game. Then the other two things I put on here, Wisconsin being right there, not great. As we all know, 3 years later, it would also suck a lot for one specific member of this team. Then the only other thing that I had on here was the ticky-tack fouls. I mean, this was horrible officiating for an NCAA tournament game. To get all these players in foul trouble and you just go, really, that one? But more so looking and saying, oh, what do you know? K-State has some foul trouble that's maybe preventing them from advancing to the next round. We know in 2010 that there was some like foul situation stuff that, you know, they weren't very fresh. They had to play a little longer because of things. Then you look and obviously Keontae Johnson, the refs get him in foul trouble against Florida Atlantic with a Final Four berth on the line. Like, oh, and how can I forget Barry Brown against UC Irvine? Like, so many times it feels like K-State has been a victim of a tight whistle in the NCAA tournament. And fortunately, it didn't cost them in this game, because I think it's one of the most consequential games in K-State basketball history, because you had been out of the tournament for so long. It was K-State's first appearance in the NCAA tournament in 12 years. And as they mentioned multiple times and things we've already heard, K-State's first win in 20 years. So the last time K-State had won an NCAA tournament game was their Sweet 16 win over Purdue in 1988 before they lost to freaking Danny and the Miracles in the Elite Eight. So, like, this was significant, and it would have really sucked if you look back on it and you go, boy, we didn't even get a chance to give our best because Michael Beasley was in foul trouble the whole time.
No, I'm right there with you. I had written down the 35-second shot clock and the ticky-tack fouls, because the fouls, especially in the second half, on both sides were brutal. Like, that first 5 minutes of the second half, it felt like they were just calling everything. I did appreciate Dan Bonner calling out how some of the fouls were going against K-State. Like that second foul against Michael Beasley, actually, he signaled that out as like, what are we doing here? So I had that written down. The other one that I have, the two others that I have that you don't, one, I have the Pac-10, because this is right before they expanded to 12. And then obviously well before they got down to 2, and now they're back at 8. So I had the Pac-10 written down. And then as much as I love the cat scratch jerseys, I have written down as something that aged poorly, the baggy shorts. It looks ridiculous out there. Like,
yeah. Like, and this, it lasted for about 5-6 more years from this point.
It's insane how shorts length has like gone and like phased in and out. Like, it obviously was way short in the 80s, then it gets a little bit longer and a little bit longer. And then the Fab Five comes and it's at your knees. And then it's like well below your knees in this era. And then like current day, it's more kind of like the 90s than it is like back then or the 80s. It's like that perfect in between. We're on a good short length now. This was like a crazy.
Some guys are starting to get a little shorter now, though, I would say.
Yeah, some do go a little shorter than others.
Some guys are dangerously close to be putting on a list. All right, let's move on here and talk about things that age the best from this game. I think we both agree here. The CBS graphics package and the whole presentation from this era, this is easily the best. Like, I think of these or, you know, that era of NFL where the bug looked a lot more like this. This to me is what I remember about the NCAA tournament and CBS, and it's just top notch all the way around. So I wanted to give a nod to that. Couple of other things, AT&T as a college basketball and CBS sponsor, they've been doing it for a long time as one of the corporate champions, as Greg Gumbel would refer to them as. And then also Kentucky had an early exit on this day. They got bounced in the first round. That has aged quite well because this was like towards the downfall. Actually, well, this was very clearly, this is Billy Gillespie's last year at Kentucky. This was like the first time they had lost in the first round in however long, or there was something significant about that they mentioned. And we now know this started a long run of Kentucky getting knocked out of the NCAA tournament well before what the expectations were for them. And then a few others that I had on here, the black jerseys from this era, they're great. Top recruits going to non-blue bloods, because it didn't happen a lot in this era, but within the last 5-6 years, it started to happen a lot more. And I think a lot of people would say it's been better for the game of college basketball. And we're only going to, I think, continue to see that expand where more teams are in play. Obviously, you know, BYU executed it with the number one player in the country, AJ DeBonta. And then the last thing I have on here is, I put a question mark by it because I was like, did that actually age well? I never really watched this show and I never understood the allure of it, but I know that it was obviously very popular. I didn't know like when it started or anything, but there was an ad read in this game for TV's number one new comedy, Drew, and it was 2.5 Men that ended up having a pretty lengthy run on TV and I think doing well ratings wise for CBS. But the question mark obviously would be for Charlie Sheen. I don't know. He did not age well. But that popped up and I was like, oh, and that's kind of the thing that I like from some of these older games is like the era. We remember talking about Brent Musburger and Britney Spears. It's like, yeah, that's pretty on brand for what we're talking about here. The H1N1 reference in the 2009 KU game. So for 08 basketball, I think it would be, 2.5 Men as the number one new comedy on TV. But those were what I thought aged well.
The things that I have that aged well, you went just in general CBS. I did just Kevin Harlan and Dan Bonner. I mean, they're still doing this 17 years later.
At a high level, too.
Yes, and at a very high level. I have written down with my question mark is coaches in suits, because it was fun to like see basketball coaches in suits again. I'm a big quarter zip guy. I know you're a big quarter zip guy, but I do like an occasional game where a coach is in a suit.
That's cool. And I thought about that when we watched the little Sports Center hit and it showed Frank Martin. I think I would rather the coaches be in suits. Like, I think you look back on it and go, man, that, you know, that's a good look. That feels like how I envision basketball. But I know that if I was coaching today, I would rather be wearing, you know, what Jerome Tang wears or something like that. And like, and it doesn't bother me that guys wear that. In fact, I look and I think, yeah, it's kind of dumb anyways that they were wearing suits over there. And football coaches have been allowed to not wear suits for eons now. So it's like, I think it looks better, especially in this, like, it's just, that's like the iconic look of a college basketball coach. But it doesn't bother me the way it is now. It's just one of those things that's different and probably won't ever go back to looking like that. But I thought about that. I'm glad you put a question mark by it, because I've got mixed feelings about it. Like, I'm not banging the drum that coaches need to be wearing it now. And I'm also not saying that that's why, like, teams are losing out on recruits or whoever. I think that was a Quake take that somebody had a while back on Twitter or something. But I don't know.
I mean, I think that there are like one or two suit games a year. Like,
yeah,
Rick Pitino does it very well.
Yeah.
The other thing that I have that aged well, K-State uniforms, like you had, K-State staff aging well.
Yeah.
Frank Martin, still a coach. Brad Underwood, still a coach. They aged well. I also really liked the court design of this era for the NCAA tournament and thought that that deserves some recognition. And then I had one thing that I totally missed about, like, not aging well during the last portion that we did. Something that didn't age well, regional NCAA tournament games. Like,
yeah,
some people got Texas A&M and BYU during the K-State game because every game was on CBS. Could you imagine if they still did that? Like, we are like in the best timeline of like how they do the NCAA tournament.
Oh yeah. It's, and just think, like, it's not a problem if you're somewhere like regionally where you're going to get to see the game, but you kind of look around and you go, wait, like if you were a K-State fan, like take for you, for example, Drew, if you were a K-State fan living where you were now, you would not have seen this game on TV.
No.
And like, that would have been brutal to deal with.
Heck, if you were a K-State fan in Texas because Texas A&M was playing that night, you wouldn't have saw it either.
Yeah, true.
Like, it's insane to think about, like, the regionality of, like, TV back then. Like, we talked about that with the 2003 K-State-Nebraska football game, too, of, like, ABC only had one game, and it was, or they had multiple games, and it was just a regional game that week. Like, I couldn't imagine the NCAA tournament, like, still being that way. But it is a step above, like, how the NCAA tournament was before then, where every game was on tape delay. So at least you're getting it live.
Yes, that is a good point. All right, so that is what we've got from that standpoint. A couple of things to close this out. We always talk random player or underrated players. So for me, the underrated player of this game is Ron Anderson, because he just out of nowhere kept popping up and doing things of consequence in this game that helped K-State get over the hump against USC. Probably of all the guys on this roster that you would have said are going to get minutes in this game, I don't think you're saying that, yeah, Ron Anderson's going to score in double figures. Like, I think you could have talked yourself into a way to saying, obviously anybody in the starting five could score in double figures. And then you could go look and say, yeah, of course Poland could. Maybe like in that area, you tell yourself, well, you know, if Fred Brown gets in the game and is hot, like, yeah, he could hit a couple threes and like that's how he does it. Ron Anderson, you just would not have been counting on for anything like that to happen. So his performance, he gets to be the underrated player of this game. Also a nod to the Darren Kent dunk. And then my random player from the game, I give it to Taj Gibson, just because, like, for me, growing up, I knew about Michael Beasley and Bill Walker and OJ Mayo, and that's what I remembered from this game. But it's not until I go back and watched, you know, later on down the line, I go, oh, wow, Taj Gibson was on that team too. And he's certainly not a random player, but for the circumstances that he was playing in here, he was not on the level of the other three guys. So I give that to Taj Gibson.
Oh, and the fact that you said, like, he is still playing in the NBA is crazy. My underrated player, I have two written down. At first, I had three, all cats, obviously. I had Ron Anderson and Dominique Sutton written down. But then, like, I was, like, thinking Dominique Sutton, because he made OJ Mayo inefficient. Like, that was all he needed to do and did it well. But then, like, as we started, like, talking about this and watching the highlights from ESPN and SportsCenter and just, like, talking more about the game, Jacob Pullen probably was an underrated player in this game. For him to come off the bench and play as well as he did, I mean, he had that pass to Ron Anderson that we highlighted. Then the Clint Stewart three that you highlighted as one of the best plays, he was one that made that pass. So he's probably the underrated player, or like deserves a shout out here. And then my random player, I also had Taj Gibson. So we're on the same page. And then for the K-State side, I had Andre Gilbert, a dude that I totally forgot about until he checked in the first half.
Yeah. The other thing that I want to point out from this game that kind of took me by surprise, because like when I'm this young, I'm not paying attention and not thinking about it. The line that Dan Bonner says about 21-year-old freshman Dominique Sutton, Dom Sutton being a freshman in college at 21, as some real Elias Rapiake to him with the life experience there, but it's true. And, you know, like the Dom Sutton thing is unfortunate for like how it worked out for K-State.
That I was devastated when he transferred.
Yeah, and obviously like had a great reason for it and everything to do it for his family and stuff, but just you look back on that, and that's another one too where you go like, if NIL was a thing back then, like there's no question that boosters are ponying up to make sure that Dom Sutton can live with his family in Manhattan and make it happen, as opposed to, you know, he played real minutes in three seasons at K-State and then transferred to North Carolina Central to do what he needed to do. And like, that's one of those where you just go, man, like that's a tip of the cap to that situation and everything written up on it to know. Cause again, like when you're 9 years old, you're not thinking about the why guys are leaving or what's going on there. I knew that there were different circumstances. So looking back through that over the years and seeing like NIL, Dominique Sutton still at K-State.
Oh, easily. There were two transfers of like my childhood and like teenage years that like were devastating. One was Dominique Sutton going to North Carolina Central. Obviously, again, just because like we were so young, it's like, why is this guy that has played like
off an Elite Eight? You know, you're like, why?
Transferring way down. And the other one was Angel Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember being like devastated when he transferred too. I definitely have some takes somewhere on the internet that probably aren't great.
Oh, were you? You were like the Southern Miss band. That's not appropriate, Drew.
I remember being very upset about the coaching that led to Angel Rodriguez transfer.
Well, you're not a real K-State basketball fan if you don't have negative posts about Bruce Weber somewhere. So the Angel Rodriguez, at that point, I think I was like, it's obviously it wasn't fun and it sucked and you would rather it have not have happened. But I don't like that one. I don't think I was as like, okay, whatever. Maybe I was just an early adopter to being like, yeah, college sports is going to suck now. Guys are just going to leave nonstop. But anyways, that is what we have from there. Do you have any other what ifs from this game? Like I talked about, you know, Bill Walker, maybe he hangs around for one more year. Is there anything else that sticks out to you that you watch or thought about from this game, this era? You also talked about, you know, the coaches in this game. Like, don't forget, like, Matt Figger was on this bench, and he ended up being a Division I head coach at two different stops. Like, this was a loaded stat, and we can't forget about Delonte Hill. He was the straw that stirred the drink on this team right here. So
the only what if, because you talked about Bill Walker, and, like, if NIL is around, like, he probably stays. The only other one that I thought about, and it was just because of how this team was constructed, they weren't constructed great. Like, as much as I loved Clint Stewart and Blake Young, my what if is like, what if they actually got OJ Mayo? Like, how much better is this K-State team?
Well, Blake Young's probably not starting an NCAA tournament game.
Because the guard play was a couple years away from being really good. Obviously.
But do you think, would it have been feasible for K-State this season? It certainly would have been fun, and the peaks would have been there, to have gone four freshmen in your starting lineup, and then you think, like, you know, your sixth guy off the bench is Jacob Pullen, who's also a freshman. Like, that would have been, and maybe in some respects, you look back on this and go, like, this is one of the more impressive feats, like, the further you get away from it and look at it in college basketball, is that this many freshmen were playing that many minutes for this team and they got to the NCAA tournament and they won a game. Like, maybe that's the takeaway.
And like, outside of Beasley and Walker, it's not like they were all like top 10 recruits. Like, Duke and Kentucky will do this every once in a while, but like, all of their guys are like top 30 guys. Like, Jacob Pullen was not a top 30 guy. Neither was Ron Anderson.
Yeah, Ron Anderson was not, went on to have two more seasons at South Florida after he was at K-State. All right, time to, go ahead.
That's not where I would have guessed. I would have thought he would have had to go lower.
Oh, well, no, he went on and had averaged about 7 points a game for the Bulls in the Big East. They won, well, actually his last year there, they were 22-14. So that's a strong showing for them. Let's see. I think where did they end up going here? Was this an NCAA tournament? They made the NCAA tournament Ron Anderson's senior year.
How
so
that?
Tip of the hat to
senior leader Ron Anderson. Wow. We've talked about like getting players on every once in a while to like talk about these games. Ron Anderson seems like a guy that would talk about this game.
Be a little fascinating. Wow, I'm looking at this USF team now. They had a guy on their team that was from Wichita, allegedly, went to Wichita East. His name was Jawanza Poland.
Jacob's boy?
Poland. It's like the country. Yeah, no, not in, yeah, he was not pulling on anything. Interesting. Not what you would expect. But yeah, shout out to Ron Anderson. Two-time NCAA tournament appearances.
Did they win a game? I'm gonna assume no.
No, they lost to Ohio 62-56 in the first round.
Yeah, that seems about right.
What am I looking at here? Actually, no, they did win a game because this is a 12-13 matchup.
How about that?
So yeah, they beat, oh my God, they beat Temple 58-44, 5-12. Temple was a 5 seed. What are we doing?
In 2012
Temple?
That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, there you go.
We talk all the time about like best and worst case scenarios, like when a team makes the NCAA tournament. There's nothing more like helpless as a fan or like as somebody that like does what we do. Than when your team goes to the NCAA tournament and like can't score.
Yeah.
like I would have lost my mind if I was an Iowa State fan 3 years ago. And oh, that game was Pitt.
This is insane. So get a load of this, Drew. Temple, as we talk about them now, they had, I'm trying to see what these gaps on me. Okay, anyways, Temple got into the NCAA tournament. They didn't win the A-10. They lost in their first game of the A-10 tournament to UMass, and they still let them in to the NCAA tournament. So they were already reeling, and then they show up, and they only score 44 and lose to Ron Anderson.
How many points did Ron Anderson have?
Let's see. Ron Anderson. 0 points, 34 minutes played in the win over you in the win over Temple.
Did he record a stat at least?
4 fouls, 3 turnovers, 2 steals, 5 rebounds.
Okay, so he's a step above that Tony Snell game. So he's got that going for him, I guess.
And then let's see, in the loss when they get bounced, he had 6 points, 3 fouls, 1 turnover, 1 block, 6 rebounds. So there you go. Kind of an enforcer with the foul count there for Ron Anderson. Anyways, that's enough on him. Let's close this out. What would you give the rating to this game? I give it a 7.9. The nostalgia and the importance does a lot of heavy lifting here, but there were some good back and forth. There were some moments, but like, and I think it's just tough to go back and watch basketball games like this one, especially because, yeah, USC got back in it, took the lead at one point, but there wasn't a whole lot of back and forth. Like, we know there are plenty of other K-State basketball games out there, especially in the NCAA tournament in recent memory, that you would put above this one in terms of how the actual game plays out. But you can't undervalue what it meant for K-State basketball to get in and win this game, getting to play in Omaha and all of that. But 7.9 is where I go.
We're actually like very similar on all of these game scores. I think that people are going to think that we like share each other, like we share notes or something.
We do not.
No, but we definitely do not. I gave this an 8.3. Nostalgia, again, like you said, it is doing a lot of heavy lifting. It also like wasn't a terrible basketball game. And I say this because K-State was still shooting threes at a good clip and making them. It was a fun Bill Walker game. It became a fun Michael Beasley game at the end to close it. So, like, it was about as peak of, like, this era as you could get, like, outside of, like, if we did the K-State KU basketball game from this era or from this season as well.
Yeah.
Like, this was just fun to see K-State in the tournament at this time period. The uniforms were elite. Michael Beasley, Jacob Poland, Bill Walker, Clint Stewart, all some of my favorite cats ever on the floor at the same time. Beating USC and OJ Mayo. I know that was a really big deal for a lot of people to beat that team and then go on to the NCAA tournament second round. It wasn't like a smooth and crisp basketball game, but that's because the refs were terrible in this game, as expected.
Yeah, that's fair too. That disrupted the flow a little bit.
But it was just fun because obviously, like, we weren't super old at this time. So to watch Bill Walker and Michael Beasley was so much fun. And then it just is a good, like, there aren't many full basketball games on YouTube. So, like, the fact that there was this one was so fun for me.
Yeah. Then, as we know, K-State went on. They lost the next game to Wisconsin, 70-55. That Wisconsin team, they were a 3 seed. They'd only lost 4 games all season.
Yeah,
going into that matchup with K-State. But in that game, Michael Beasley, 23-13. That was the final game of his K-State career, as well as Bill Walker. And Beasley finished out with 28 double-doubles that season. Walker had 18 in that game against Wisconsin. Nobody else had more than 4 points, though. Scoreless, Clint Stewart, 4 for Blake Young, 2 for Dom Sutton, 4 for Poland, 2 for Kent, 2 for Anderson, and then nothing from anybody else.
I guess this is where I get into my other take. There will never be a better basketball player at K-State or more talented than Michael Beasley.
Nah, better, dominant, talented. Yeah.
26-12 in one season is obscene.
As a freshman, like, it's just, yeah. he was the best player in college basketball, and Tyler Hansborough is a loser. So there you go.
Should we plug the game for next week now, since neither one of us are going on a show in between now and then, I don't think.
Oh yeah. Well, let me pull it up here. Give everybody kind of the rundown here of what we are staring down. We have a lot of football coming up, and I've determined, I'm glad everybody watches. I hope that you enjoy it. I've determined football is the far better format for this to do and look back on, because, you know, the basketball, it's like the plays are 5 seconds in length. So you don't have like a lot of, and the big plays, it's like you're trying to determine, well, there's going to be about 40 made shots in a game. So which one's big, which one's not. But we get back to football next week. We'll do a run on football. And next week, it is the 1997 Fiesta Bowl, K-State and Syracuse, Michael Bishop, Donovan McNabb. We look forward to doing that. We've got a couple of games.
All you people that were pining for Darnell McDonald to be on our honorable mention wide receiver Mount Rushmore, this is your time to shine.
Yep. We might get to see it, what you were talking about and looking at coming up here. But all right, that will do it for today. We will get out of here, and I'll just leave everybody with a handful of these plays to close things out so you get a look at them. Once again, we start with the Mike Beasley FU3.
Well, it's been a while since USC got a stop on the defensive end, and that's what they need now.
Walker is picked up. Jefferson is screened by Beasley. Now they switch on defense. And Jefferson goes on Beasley, launching a three. A cold-blooded three by Michael Beasley.
Man-to-man defense.
Beasley might set a screen. Pullen goes outside. Walker for three. Cold! Bill Walker with his first points in the second half.
Oh, and Lewis not looking for the ball.
And Lewis launching and missing. Beasley's got the double-double with his 10th rebound.
Boy, that pass surprised Lewis, and he never got under control before he shot it.
Going to Anderson. Anderson puts it in. He's got 10. He averages 3. Approaching 4 to play. And Kansas State's got their biggest lead tonight. He collects his eighth rebound.
Boy, if he gets his hands on the ball, nobody's taking it from him.
Young pulling Beasley a screen. Outside, it's a Stewart three. Right down the middle.